The question has come before us many times, and we've really never gone into it. Last week, as a matter of fact, the Ben Noach asked me the question. It's a pretty open question, but we simply have never approached it until this time. And that is, in Sefer Bereishis, what exactly is the Sipur of the Nahash? Okay, what exactly does that mean? All right, now, we went through different aspects of Gan Eden and Odom and Chava and the structure of the human mind, how it took place and the order that took place and the order that took place. We went through this at length. But we never really explained what exactly does it mean when it says that the snake was more cunning than any other animal of the field. Okay? And what exactly is the Nahash? What does it mean over there? Okay. Of course, there are many questions. They've all been raised already as to how you understand the Parsha, because of the fact that if the Nahash actually spoke, I mean, so then why in the curse doesn't it say that he lost the ability to speak? And also, Mefarshim Master say we don't notice that the snake has the faculties, the physical faculties to enable him to speak. I mean, all these types of questions are raised. Also, we notice that the when God didn't ask the Nahash why he did what he did. Okay, he asked Adam, he asked Chava, but he didn't ask the Nahash. Okay, yeah, just the Nahash. He says, to Nahash, to Adam, he says, did you eat from the tree that I have forbidden you to eat from? And then he said, why did you do this? And then when the Isha makes reference to the Nahash, blames the Nahash, so then God says, because you did this, you are cursed from all the animals of the from all the animals and from all the wild animals of the field. Okay. So you see, it's different. There is a difference here between the way God deals with the Nahash and the way he deals with Adam and Chava. Okay. Yeah, I mean, these questions these questions have all been raised by the Mefarshim. And but before I start, I'd like to just preface this year with a few words, and that is that you have to be very careful what you do with questions like this. I mean, there are certain approaches that are legitimate and certain approaches that are not legitimate. Okay, in my opinion, it's not legitimate to just say that the Nahash is symbolic of the Yetzer Hara or something like that. That's not a legitimate approach for a very simple reason. Because if you introduce an approach, it has to be consistent. Logic dictates that there should be some consistency here. Okay? So if you're going to say the Nahash is a metaphor, so maybe Vayishneh Marum is a metaphor. Maybe Vayishmu is Kolor Hashem Elokim is Halech Bagan, the Ruach Hayom is also a metaphor. Okay? I mean, the Farshim say Vayishmu is Kolor Hashem Elokim is Halech Bagan, the Ruach Hayom. So the Farshim derive a very interesting fact from that. That sound travels. Nimtzonu l'meidim sheyesh hiluch l'kol, which was a discovery that was made by man many, many years later. But they bring rayas. Kol ha'kanachash yelech. Kol shofa holech v'chazek ma'od. So this is what Chazal say, that a person can derive scientific knowledge parenthetically through the Torah, not directly, that's not the Torah's purpose, but since the Torah is true, there's nothing in the Torah that's false, so parenthetically certain things can be derived. Gemara B'chorah says that with regard to the Nahash, by the way. Okay, which again shows that the Nachash is not metaphorical. But to my mind, to say that the Nachash is merely a metaphor is a very dangerous kind of approach, because then you're getting into an approach where you could metaphorize the entire Torah. Say Moshe and Aaron was a metaphor, Mitzrayim was a metaphor. You could say Adam and Chav was a metaphor. Everything's a metaphor. So Vayishneim Arumim, say they weren't really naked. It's a metaphor. Yes, it's true. Chazal say it means that he had one mitzvah and he was unable to do it. So Arumim reflects a certain nakedness of the soul. That's true, but it doesn't deny the fact. I mean, of course, behind the method of understanding Torah is that behind the surface material there are deep ideas. That's correct, but we don't deny the surface material. We don't say that these things are just metaphors. Once you do that, then I think you're opening up the door. First of all, it's not consistent, because everything else is pshuto kishal mikra, and all of a sudden this one thing is a complete metaphor. I mean, it's a strange kind of a thing. If you would want to say it is a metaphor, I'll get back to that in a second. I see somebody has a question. Yes, go ahead. Forget about the mafarsh. I mean, the first thing we have to use is our sechel in understanding things. Things have to make sense. You see, a mafarsh, Rajbo says, you have to understand what he means. You have to use our sechel there. Okay. And, yes. Yeah, but all I'm saying is that you can't enter an inconsistent approach that's inconsistent with your whole method of interpreting the Torah. You cannot say, over the Gedolei of the Balei HaMasara, and no one ever said Breish Bolakim is a metaphor, and therefore that's definitely not the Pshat in the Pasuk. You know what it says? We have Balei HaMasara, we don't just come and take a book and read it like Lahavdil Goyim do. Okay. That's why what I'm saying is like this, that unless a person has to be, my argument is very simple, and a person has to be consistent. If you're ready to say the Nachash is a metaphor, then you have to be ready to say everything else is a metaphor. And the question is, do we actually are ready to do that? I don't think Balei HaMasara are ready. If you do that, you're throwing away all the Balei HaMasara, all the Chazal. I mean, even with regard to the Nachash, the Gemara says in Bechora, so you derive certain things about snakes from the Nachash. Incidentally, Agavorcha, okay, gestation period, whatever it might be. But what I'm saying is that our approach is not that is not metaphor. That was the approach of Philo of Alexandria. It was Namaritz introduced that. He took that approach. I'm not saying the Torah doesn't lend itself to that approach. There's a reason why the Torah happens to lend itself to that approach, because the Torah is very deep, and it does strike at the chords of major ideas. And since that's the case, so of course, something which is highly ideational will also lend itself to metaphorical interpretation. But that's not the. But we know how to. That's not true. I mean, some of the ideas may be correct, but the point is that's not the way we learn Torah. I mean, to say we learn Torah that way is simply to deny all the Balei HaMasara. And once a person does that, then you know where he is. I mean, that's it. He's lost. He's gone. Then there's nothing. There's nothing left. So my point is this.
Why do you make a distinction?
Chazal is something different. Chazal was what Chazal wrote in Midrashim were not nitnli kosev. They were kept as secrets among the Gedolei HaChachomim. So then you have then of course Mishle says that the to understand the riddles of the Chachamim. But that was something kept private. But the Torah Shebichsav was given to everyone, and it was never given riddles. It wasn't given as metaphors and riddles. I mean, we have a way of understanding these things. There's a logic for why certain things are Shlom Melech, of course, says Divrei Chachamim v'chidosam. But there's a methodology. There's a way to understand these things. We don't say things are just metaphors and riddles. You have to know where and when. In terms of Torah Shebichsav, for a person to say that Torah Shebichsav is metaphors is really borders on kfirah. Okay, it depends. I mean, I'm not going to say where is it. Basically, it's a denial of the whole method of understanding and interpreting the psukim. Okay, no one interprets that way. We don't interpret that way. Okay, anthropomorphic expressions are different. And when you study, when a person studies them, he sees that there are only certain types of anthropomorphic expressions, not primitive anthropomorphic expressions. And there's a purpose for that, is to teach Odom how to behave and how to act. Rashi says, Rambam says, that's a simple, but that's a Dava Pasha, something which a person understands. I mean, a person understands. Okay, that's for Limud, and there's a consistency in the anthropomorphic expressions in the Torah. There's only, like I said, when you study, there are only certain types and are permissible. I mean, it's not like Lahavdil, Elafavdolos, I mean, other works, primitive works. There you see right away the what they're doing, exactly what Torah deems the worst evil, which the Avodah Zarah. Okay, well, we have this is certain expressions which were necessary in order to teach man certain ideas. Okay, that we know this, but this is a logical thing. It's clear, and we understand it, and it's consistent. But to suddenly take a pasuk of the Torah and just say that this is metaphorical because it lends itself to some kind of way of explaining it, in my opinion, is not legitimate. It's not legitimate. I think the best thing to say is, I don't know what it means. That's it. So I don't know what the pasuk is. Okay? But not to distort the meaning of the Torah. Yeah? If the Torah is talking about malachim, so of course it's not speaking about a physical being. So there's an idea over there. If it's Tsar Tzavol, malachim, that's a different area. Then we're entering a different area of interpretation, like the Rambam says. Whenever it mentions Malach Elokim, it's a different thing. Of course, that's it's not a metaphor. It's a different kind of an area. The area Vayeyavek Ish Imo Adalos Hashachar is a clear reference to a Malach Elokim. If you read the Psukim over there, it's a reference. Kisariso Imanoshim V'Malohim V'Tuchal. That's Elohim is a Malach over there. I mean, that's a different kind of. Of course, the Torah discusses things that are non-physical, but that's not the same thing as taking a mikra and saying it's a metaphor. That's a different kind of a thing. You understand what I'm saying? If you do that, in my opinion, you're opening the door to destroy Kol HaTorah Kulah. Because, like I said, if that's true, if that's something, Nachash is a metaphor. Vayispro Leisaino is a metaphor. Vayishnei Rumim is a metaphor. Vayishmos Kolon Shemalili Kimithalach Bagon is a metaphor. Vayomala Yeko is a metaphor. Everything's a metaphor. You can't do that. It's not, first of all, it's against our whole method of interpretation. Secondly, it's inconsistent. It's inconsistent. So, just to give an answer to a difficult parsha, in my opinion, we have an old rule, and that is Lamed Lashon Chol Lamed Yedeya. So I don't know the pshat, but not to introduce new methodology, which actually is destroys the whole Torah, basically. Okay. In short, you have to be consistent. You have to be consistent over here. Okay. Ay vanochash ayorim doesn't sound like it's a water. No, it's a kasha. Okay. The Rav one time said, "Father of Alexandria is like a conservative rabbi." I mean, basically, what did the Rav mean? He doesn't really say such terrible things. On the contrary, he's a very high-level individual. I mean, he one time said, they asked him what Torah is. It's the sum total of human knowledge. That's correct. Right? He was a big chacham, but he didn't know how to learn. I mean, you know, you can't come from nowhere and just approach this sefer. I mean, Sefer Torah Moshe has a source and a methodology. And you need Sinai and you need the Bala Nasara. Without that, it's a closed book. I mean, okay. Yeah. There are places, when I say metaphor, I mean, you have to understand that word can be taken very far, and it could mean, and it could be referenced to a little expression. I mean,
I'd rather use the word.
Harim Gwan with Suras Bashamayim. Doesn't mean the mountains are in the sky, in the heavens. I mean, in the upper atmospheres. It means to say it's an expression. Yeah, we have expressions in the Torah that are, you know. But that's something that's a Rabbi Rosenthal saying. Dibra Torah Goshman Yadam. There's a certain style to it. But just to say an event and an incident is a metaphor. That is something new, which is a different kind of approach, which is against our whole method of interpreting Torah straight through. I mean, we don't do that. Okay. And since we don't do it, it means to say Even in Bereshis, where it's Napshuto Kamashmo, that's the parsha where we have in the Masoreh, it's Napshuto Kamashmo, but no one goes around saying that there's no literal meaning. I mean, there's no the literal words are not correct. That the Yabasha was not Yabashon, there was no oceans, and the whole description is basically a physical description. It has a deeper meaning. It's fine, good, but there is a Pshuto Shel Mikra. I mean, there's a Pshuto Shel Mikra. It's Eina Mikra Kipshuto, and that's in Bereshis. That means the Seder is not the same. You have to understand what's happening there, but it doesn't mean this whole thing's a metaphor. That's not a legitimate approach. Okay. Say, listen me, but there were Mepharshim that did say the Nachash was a son. Okay, fine. Yeah. See, I don't care really. I think, as I said before you go to any Mepharshim, you have to understand what we know. Okay? Let's forget about Mepharshim. This one says that. Okay? It's very nice. But what do we know about interpreting Torah? There are certain things that are Yesodis that you just can't deny. Mepharsh says it, let's understand the names, okay? First of all, it's a machlokus between the mafarshim. That's number one. Okay, machlokus in the mafarshim. And one of the gedolei hamafarshim, who really is considered someone that is not bound by the this is the way they consider him. I don't consider him this way, but the outside world considers him this way. As an individual is not bound by the traditional, so-called, quote, traditional interpretation, methods of interpretation, which to their mind makes him a kind of a free-range thinker. Again, I don't agree with this. I think it's because they don't understand him. But this individual, namely the Ibn Ezra, is the one that says that the Nachash is Pshuto Shel Mikra. Pshuto Shel Mikra, Kipshuto. So this immediately should set you off that there's something funny over there. I mean, because if any one of the Mepharshim should be comfortable with the idea, if there were such an idea, that the Nachash is not Pshuto Shel Mikra, should be Ibn Ezra. But he makes a point of he makes it quite clear that the Nachash was Kipshuto. So immediately you have a signal. Okay? Now, I'll explain. Now, let me just qualify. All right. So now we have to understand how there are Mepharshim who entertain the idea that the Nachash is not literal. Okay. In my opinion, there would be only one way to do so. But the way to do so would not be as the ways we've presented up till now, which are a contradiction to our methods of analysis that we know from the Masorah. All right? The only way it would be possible would be if someone can demonstrate why this Nachash incident is so different than anything else that by definition it has to be metaphorical. That's, you understand, I don't know if you understand what I was saying. Maybe we'll come back to this later. I'll explain myself a little more clearly. Okay? But without such a proof and such a demonstration, to say that it's metaphorical simply goes against every principle we have in analysis of Torah. It's inconsistent, and it's against the derech of the Masorah. Okay? Again, unless someone can show me why this in specific is different than everything else in the case of the case of Gan Eden, and it must be a metaphor. That's something else. If someone can do that, that's quite a feat. But if somebody could do that, then I would say that they have a right to make such a claim. You understand what I'm saying? It's a pretty big feat to be able to do that. You have to be able to show me why, and by definition, this is the case. All right. But without that, without doing that, without really proving that, you should never venture on this path. And it has to be proven. You shouldn't venture on this path because, as I said, these type of methods of thinking destroy the whole system of Yahadis. I mean, that's what everything becomes a metaphor until you get to the point where mitzvahs become metaphors. Everything. I mean, it's the angle of itself. It's not the way the Torah was written. It's not the style of the Torah. We know how to read the Torah. There's a certain style to it. Okay. Of course, there are answers to that. I mean, there those who first want to say that the it was different doesn't mean Dafka spoke. It was a method of communication. I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to be... that could be the term. It doesn't. There's another thing I want to mention, and that is that that whenever you interpret the... I realize that there is a person feels compelled to defend Torah, you know, and that certainly is a virtuous thing. So, I mean, there's a person is mechuyev to, insofar as he can, to defend Torah. Chazal say dama she'tashu l'apikaris, okay, which means that we're obligated to answer apikaris. Now, I want to say, what exactly does that mean? What does it mean dama she'tashu l'apikaris? You're obligated to understand Torah. That's it. You understand Torah. You answer the apikaris. Apparently it means that you might not understand an area, and therefore, as an honest investigator in the area, you would simply remove yourself. You say, I don't understand what it's about. Okay. But, nevertheless, if someone attacks the Torah, you should be able to defend it logically, okay, logically to defend it, as long as the defense is within the parameters of Torah, it's fine, even though you don't understand the area. In other words, that's really what it means. Damasha Torah is a certain kind of limud. The difference between damasha Torah l'apikaris and between the true investigation is, in damasha Torah l'apikaris, you're not really uncovering new ideas. You're just answering questions, okay? In real Torah learning, a person is interested in gaining new ideas, and that's the purpose of Torah. So, it is important to distinguish between these two types of learning. In other words, when you learn an area and you explain it, you have to take a look back and see what the new ideas are that you're gaining from the Torah. If you're just answering something, you're saying this is the instincts, this is that. I mean, but in truth, you really haven't uncovered any ideas. Then, I mean, then already it's a limit of Dama Shashla Pekaris. I'm not saying that's wrong. It has a place. But that's not genuine. That's not genuine limit. Genuine limud has to uncover ideas. So, I mean, you hear a lot of drushes these days, you know, people are answering Rashis and this and that. But the main thing is, after the drush, the question is, what is the idea? What do you derive from this? Okay? If it's just a banality, or repeated again and again, the same common notion, then there's something wrong there. That could be good for Damasha Tashla Pekaris. Apikaris, I say, Kashin, Rashi, no, Rashi's not difficult. Of course, Rashi means this and that and this. Okay, fine. That's a certain kind of limud. But that's not real limud. Real limud is not Damasha Tashla Pekaris. Real limud is something where you see ideas, where there are major ideas being uncovered. Okay? Yeah. Okay. So that, I think, is important, too, in this area, that not to just answer what exactly happened with the Nachash, but to be able to see if there are certain ideas that are being uncovered here, or just using metaphorical methods of saying this is that. Okay, it's all very nice, but what's the new idea of it? Okay? All right. Okay, let's take...
Donnie's question?
Yeah. All right. So what we're going to do is, again, I mean, I am not saying over here that the ideas of the Nachash do not contain important notions concerning the Satan and the Yetzirah. I mean, I would never say such a thing. I mean, but again, I'm saying that if you cannot explain the Nachash in the way you explain everything else, there's something wrong. There's something wrong, can't be? Okay. All right. What I want to say is, fellow, let's take the Ibn Ezra's approach. Ibn Ezra says that the Nachash was, and I know also another thing is, I didn't come here, I know there's a Rambam on this, and everybody goes into the Rambam and the Maariv Uchum. And with this moral riding on the Nachash. Again, over here, I would like to mention something which I think is important also. First of all, two things. First of all, if anybody understands the secrets of the Mor Nevuchim, I would suggest they shouldn't disclose them, because that's exactly why the Rambam wrote them in a secret, okay? That the secrets of the Mor Nevuchim are supposed to remain secret. I mean, that's the Rambam paskin that Shaila. And I think he certainly is one that has the right to paskin a Shaila on his own works, okay? So that's number one. Number two, I think it really is foolish for a person to think when he reads the Mor Nevuchim that he's going to understand the secrets of the Rambam. Because something the Rambam himself said. The Rambam said that about the Ibn Ezra. He said the Ibn Ezra's Sodos cannot be understood by anyone other than he who is within his Madrega, on his Madrega. They cannot be understood by anybody who is not on the Madrega of the Ibn Ezra. Okay? Doesn't mean he has to be as great as the Ibn Ezra, but he's got to be like we have a Lushan of Chachmei Yisrael. You have to be in his Mechitza, at least. Okay? There's such a thing as Mechitzas. There's Mechitzas. It's boundaries. In the Mechitza, there are different individuals standing in different positions. Okay? But there is such a thing as being in the Mechitza. Okay? So, what the Rambam was saying is that you cannot understand the Ibn Ezra Sodas unless you're on his Madriga. Means within his Mechitza. I don't think anybody today thinks that they're in the Mechitza of the Rambam. So therefore, it's futile for a person to think that he's going to understand the secrets of the Mor Nevuchim by studying the Mor. That's an impossibility. Okay? So therefore, I say for two reasons. Even if there were such a person that would be on that level, it would be awesome for him to disclose it anyways. And secondly, there is no one that's on that level. Not to my knowledge, anyway. Person who thinks there's a Mechitza to Rabban, I don't think there's anybody even thinks such an idea. So therefore, this whole idea of looking into the mind, that's in general is an idea that really comes from an infantile source in man. Not really, it's not really from the Tzelem of a kid. That's an infantile thing that everybody wants to know the secrets of this and that, and as if they're ready for these kind of secrets. I mean, it's an emotional kind of attitude. It's not a realistic one. I mean, we stress in Yadis reality. Reality, a person should know where he's at and know that these things are beyond his ken, beyond his mental vision. Okay? All right. Let's try this and explain something. Yeah, so the Ibn Ezra once again says that the Nochash is literal. And then Danny's question, you know, how could he speak? I mean, Ibn Ezra also knew this problem. It still didn't stop him from saying it. It's important to look at Gedolei HaMefarshim. It's a very important thing to look at Gedolei HaMefarshim. If this was such a problem that threw the whole thing into metaphor, how could Ibn Ezra? He didn't know this. I mean, you understand what I'm saying? There's a way to handle problems and solutions. You don't just say, the problem, the show, whoop, the whole thing's a metaphor. That's a big conclusion. you can't do such things. Okay. Especially, you see, the Gedolei HaMefarshim didn't do it. All right? And the same thing is true about the diktuk of the psukim and the same thing. Hu Yishuf Harosh, some people in the Medayagwad and say Birosh. Ibn Ezra says, it's Birosh, and he brings other writers that you have such expressions. You have to go by the Gedolei HaMefarshim. Can't just go by your own. I suggest also, especially in diktuk, we are very weak in diktuk, and we're very weak in Lashna Mikra. But we fortunately have Gedolei HaMefarshim that knew Lashna Mikra very well. Ibn Ezra, Rashi, Ramban. I mean, so you have to guide yourself by what they say. It's very dangerous for a person to come along at this point and just start being darshaning diktuk of the pasuk. It doesn't say a base, so it definitely means this. You have to go through all Tanakh and see if that's really true, that a base can't be missing. I mean, you have to see these things. You can't just take one pasuk and become a great grammarian. Okay, there's a way to go about it. You have to look at the Gedolei HaMefarshim. Yes. Now, before, what I was saying before is like this, that we start with certain principles that we know are correct. Like we know the Balei HaMasor and the Derech of the Balei HaMasor. That's what I was saying before. Now, but I'm not saying we shouldn't avail ourselves of Mefarshim. I'm saying you have to avail yourself of Mefarshim within the framework of the knowledge that we have. Okay? I'm not saying Chas V'Shalom, we shouldn't avail ourselves of Mefarshim. have to know how to do it, though. It has to be within the proper framework. Okay? You can't take a literal word of Mefarsh and throw away all the principles that you have of interpreting Torah. Then there's something wrong. You have to understand what Mefarsh means. There's a logical method of approaching these things. That's what I was saying. Okay?
Yeah.
So the question is, let's go back to the question of what the Nachash is. What is the Nachash? And let's learn, like the plain pshat, pshat v'sham mikra, like I always do, that there was such a thing as a Nachash. Okay. Right, so what should we say about this Nachash? All right, first thing we say, you mentioned before, the question is, did the Nachash have Chachma? I mean, Chachma Tzelem Elokim, correct? The Tzelem Elokim? That for sure we could say is not true. Because the Tzelem Elokim is clearly stated was only given to man. Okay? Nase Odom b'tzalmeinu kidmuseinu, not Nase Nochash b'tzalmeinu kidmuseinu. So Odom is the only one that has a Tzelem Elokim. And this, and here we find the consistency, because we find the Nochash wasn't really dealt, God didn't deal with the Nochash like he dealt with Adam and Chava, because Adam and Chava had Bechira, and therefore they were questioned. They were, why did they do this? The Nachash, on the other hand, isn't questioned. So you see, there's a consistency there. There's a consistency there. Okay. So let's understand, if that is the case, what does it mean that Nachash Hayaro Mikol Chayas Asada Asher Osa Arashem Malakim? Right? Okay. Aram Mikol Chayas Asher Osa Arashem Malakim. What exactly does that mean? I think over here, the Torah is telling us a very big yisod. Big yisod. The Nachash was really an animal that he was another animal, but just very simple. Pshuto shemir, just like the pasuk says, "V'nachash ha'ya'arum mikol chayas asoda," which means to say the Nachash had a higher intelligence than any other animal that existed. Plain shot in the pasuk. I don't see any problem with that. Okay, I just don't see any problem with that. In other words, we know that animal intelligence goes up to a certain level. Okay, I don't know the estimated level of a three-year-old, or a chimpanzee, or something around there, whatever. But animal intelligence has a certain limit. Okay? As a matter of fact, all the upper cursum since the time of Darwin have always wondered about this question. Why is it that there's such a tremendous gap between the intelligence of animals and the intelligence of man? And that is something which poses a very big question to the whole concept of the evolutionary process, because there's this tremendous gap. And that's why they're looking for the missing link, always trying to find the missing link. Whether they say they can't find the missing link, there's evidence of the missing link, or they'll take a monkey and say, he is the missing link, he can speak, you know, all kinds of methods are used, many of them very deceitfully and dishonestly, in order to answer this question, because this is a big problem. Okay? Of course, the concept of a missing link, the very definition of missing link is apocorsis. Because missing link means that it's just a quantitative gradation from the animal life to man. All right, it's a quantitative process. So the link means it's the same, made of the same substance, just a link. All right, we don't hold such a thing as a missing link, but something similar to what they're looking for, which cannot be found in through archaeological digs, but it can be found, in my opinion, in the Torah. Okay, and that is the Nachash. The Torah tells us plain and simple that animal intelligence at one time was far greater than it is today. And there was an animal that had much higher intelligence. This animal was the Nachash. Plain shot, the Nachash Hayar Mikol Chayas Asoda. Okay? All right. So what does this show? I mean, just think about it for a moment. What does this show? Exactly. That's the concept. That it is possible to have intelligence without Tselem Elokim. Okay? In other words, what the Torah teaches is that animal intelligence is qualitatively differentiated than human intelligence. It doesn't deny animal intelligence. So, yeah, of course, some think that we would deny animal intelligence. We don't deny animal intelligence, and we don't maintain that an animal could not, in fact, be more intelligent. There's no reason why the animal intelligence had to stop at a certain level. It could have gone on much, much, much greater. It could have a much more intelligent animal. Would he have a Tselem Elokim? Absolutely not. But he'd be a very intelligent animal. I mean, the intelligence that he would have would be of the same nature as animal intelligence. Animal intelligence is a kind of, let me just describe it, it is a kind of mechanical ability to perceive and to understand. Okay? But it's lacking the Tselem Elokim. What does it mean it's lacking the Tselem Elokim? What exactly does that mean? It means to say that man's intelligence is not an advanced animal intelligence. Man's intelligence is something qualitatively differentiated. It means man has the ability to remove himself from the world of the instinctual and just have all his energies placed in the world of thought. And that world of thought, to him, becomes pure reality. Okay? Functionally, I'm just describing functionally what the Tselem Elokim is capable of doing. That no animal could do. The Nachash couldn't do it. Could not do that. The Nachash was unable to sit back and contemplate and be thrilled by the ideas that came into his mind, just like a human being, is capable of doing. He was not able to do that. Why? Because his intelligence was rooted and tied inextricably to his instinct, to his instinctual life. Okay? You see, that was the Nachash. The Nachash was a unique creature. It was a funny kind of creature. I mean, it comes out actually, it's really, to my mind, it's mashlin the Seder Abriya, basically. Okay? It's mashlin the Seder Abriya, because you have various intelligences in animals, and then you have this animal which is very, very intelligent, okay? But it's still not the Tselem Elokim. The Yesod, the concept that you derive from this, first of all, on a basic level, is that human intelligence and animal intelligence are qualitatively differentiated. And do not mistake, the Torah is saying, do not mistake animal intelligence or the mere idea of intelligence, whatever that means in your mind, do not mistake that mechanical intelligence with the Tselem Elokim. The Tselem Elokim is something else. That's what the Pasuk is pointing out. That's an important idea. It's an important concept. It's a Yesod. Okay, it's an important idea. So by the Torah saying, V'anochash haya oru mikol chayas asoda, the Torah is laying down a very important principle. Namely, that there are two different types of intelligence. There's an intelligence which is rooted in the instinctual, or mechanical type of intelligence, which has nothing whatsoever to do with the Tselem Elokim. And then there's an intelligence in man, which is something unique, different, where there's a Tselem Elokim, where the person can perceive a reality, a world of reality, that's far away from anything that has to do with his instinctual life. Okay, that's a Tselem Elokim. Yeah.
Are you saying that the difference...
This is the most distinctive mark of the difference between animal intelligence and human intelligence. The ability to perceive a different reality and to think and to know that this reality of ideas is more real than anything physical. It's like the Rambam says in one of his letters. The greater the Chacham, the more real is the world of the abstract. The less the Chacham, the more real is the world of the physical. Okay? That's the Tselem Elokim. That is the essence of the... That's the most distinctive mark of the Tselem Elokim. Okay? Machine intelligence, or what they call artificial intelligence, is mechanical intelligence. That's mechanical. No, the machine can't contemplate, enjoy, be attracted to the reality and the beauty of it. It's impossible. It's mechanical. That's mechanical intelligence. Yes. Yeah. Bechira, of course, is an essential, plays an essential role, but all the Gdolei Mefarshim say that the idea of Tselem Elokim is intelligence. That's not, less mindable. But of course, Bechira, Ramban brings in Bechira as well. Because Bechira is when you have these two perceivers, and like I mentioned many times, there is no, psychologists are looking for a unified human personality. There's no unified human personality. Can't be. Because man is constructed of two different elements. One has nothing to do with the other. It's a constant, there has to be a constant strife and a constant battle by definition of what man is. There's no unification between his, and that's the upper course, and we're looking for animal intelligence and the missing link. They're maintaining it's a unified creature, and there's more of this, that, you know, blended together. Yahadis maintains that's absolutely false. That in man you can never have a unified personality, because it's two different things. It's a malach and a behemoth. There's no unification. Okay, how they coexist is a big mystery. We don't know. That's a big mystery. Rishonim raised the question. How can they coexist? Okay, separate problem. But this we know that the human personality is made up of two qualitatively differentiated entities. When man is in thought in the world of ideas, he's in something different, completely different than when he's in the instinctuals. Two different dichotomized. Okay.
There's a proof for your
right. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The punishment of the nochash, of course, has to be understood in a different way. And as was mentioned before, he wasn't taken to task, so to speak. God didn't say, why did you do this? So we have to understand what that punishment. Orurato, we call it, so it's a different kind of a thing. It's a different kind of thing, all right? You can't just use the word punishment here. Yes?
Targum says chakam.
Targum says chakam, yeah. The orum always means chakam. Okay? It says, vayedabru... Dabru b'nei Yaakov, Dibru Shrem ba'arma. This is b'mirma over there, and mirma and arma. It means that he says b'chuchmasa. It's chachma. No, a Russia arum. Russia arum means very clever, intelligent. Okay. Ani chachmas shechanti arma. That's right. Ani chachmas shechanti arma. Yeah, that's right. It means he knows. Arma is a certain kind of a intelligence, but it's a shrewdness, intelligence. Okay. There's a certain type of thing that can wash things off. I think, as a matter of fact, there's a whole thing about these monkeys that learn these different, how to do different things on an island, if I'm not mistaken, correct? Yes. So there's animal intelligence. We don't deny animal intelligence. The animals can be highly intelligent in their capacity. The Torah never denies that. As a matter of fact, what I'm saying is the Torah on the contrary. The Torah over here is saying that the animals were more intelligent. There was a more intelligent species than any species that we see today. Okay? And there's nothing illogical about it. As a matter of fact, it completes the picture. Makes sense. It should be that way. Okay? From a biological standpoint, it should be that way. What? Now let's take a look. Let us see what ideas, I mean, what concepts we can glean from this idea. Because we're saying that the plain interpretation of the pasuk is telling us, the plain interpretation of the Torah is telling us, that there was an animal that had a superior kind of intelligence. So, there's a Yerushalmi in Kiddushin that says something interesting. I'll just read the Yerushalmi, and you tell me what the idea is that you can glean. It's a psychological idea. What idea you can glean from this Yerushalmi? Yerushalmi says like this. Yerushalmi says, Anocha Shayarum. Yerushalmi says, My armu mise. What exactly was this cleverness, this shrewdness, this intelligence? So Yishama says, Omar, he said like this, Yodeyani Yishomar Kodesh Baruch Hu Kibiyomar Chochum Imenu Mos Thomas. I know very well that God said that the day you eat from the tree, you will surely die. Hare ani holech, I am going to go, Umarame Bahem Es Ha'odam V'ishto, I will fool, deceive Adam and his wife. They mochlim, they're going to eat. Then they're noshim, they'll become punished. Vani yerush esaretz latzmi, and I'll inherit the whole world for myself. Okay, right, now already, now you can come in with metaphor. Now you can say it's not really a metaphor, but it's an idea. I mean, it's an idea that Chazal are conveying here. It's an important idea. What is the idea that Chazal are conveying? That the Nachash had a whole plan here, a very intelligent plan. Plan was, he knew that Adam and Chava were instructed not to eat from the tree. So therefore he knew that what? That if they should eat from the tree, they're going to be punished with death. So he figured out very logically, when you minus them off the earth, so then he's left. He's the most intelligent of all the animals. So he'll be in a very good situation. He'll find himself in a very good situation. He has the whole world to himself. Okay? What's that? Actually, the concept that I think Yerushalmi mentions, you can also find from the Pesukim in the Torah itself. From the Torah itself. Basically, what the Yerushalmi is showing you is something which you'll hear psychologists are discussing today. And that is, the question is, the idea, one of the unique things about the human mind is that a human being is capable of self-awareness. The animal world, we don't find that. We don't find such an idea. I mean, to the extent, I mean, I'm, again, I mean, to a certain extent, a little bit. But the extent of self-awareness that we find in man is qualitatively differentiated from the type of self-awareness that we find in the animal kingdom. Okay, it's a different kind of phenomenon. What does this Chazal show, really? It shows you that instinct and intelligence are enough to create self-awareness. Okay? In other words, it's not the Tzelem Elokim that plays a role in self-awareness, but it's purely the mechanical intelligence and the instinctual aspect of man. That combination is enough to give self-awareness. Okay? Because what is the matter saying? What is Shalmi saying? Shalmi saying that the snake said that I'll deceive them and I'll trick them into doing an avera. Once they do the avera, then what's going to happen? They're going to be removed. But then I will be here to take over. I can get a man. I'll be here to take over. So therefore, what do you see? You see the awareness of the self. The awareness of the self is not something that has anything to do with the Tzelem Elokim. This is an important thing, another important thing. It has nothing to do with the Tzelem Elokim. It simply has to do with the instinct and with mechanical intelligence. Okay? All right? Yeah. That's an important principle. Yeah. It's interesting. Ibn Ezra says that you'll notice the Nochash never says the Shem Havaya. Right? Yeah, see? It says, because the pasuk starts off, it says, "Vanochash hayor mikol chayas hasoda asher osa Hashem Elokim." Hashem Elokim is Hashem Havaya. That's the name of the sacred name. This power of another reina saticho Elohim leparo. Okay, it means that you have power over him. Okay, so because you see later. So it says Vayishmu. It says, it doesn't say Yishmu is Kol Elokim. Vayishmu is Kol Hashem Elokim. Is Halach Bagon LaRachayam. Vayikra Hashem Elokim Ala Adam Liyam Ala Yeka. But by the Nachash, it never says Hashem, because it means the Nachash perceived God, but in some kind of a power, over restrictive agent. Something that's restricting him is more power than himself. But he never could have a real perception of God. Never, not the. I don't know what his perception was, but his perception was simply was not on the level where it was non-physical, like man is capable of conceiving God after much study and knowledge. His was just an effect, so to speak, a force that restricted him. Okay, yes, yeah. So okay. So from the Yerushalmi, you can deduce that self-awareness in man does not come from that part of him, which is the Tzelem Elokim, which is the divine element. It's not from the divine element, okay? It's simply from a combination of intelligence and instinct. Instinct and intelligence will result in a recognition and awareness of the self. Okay. But now I want to ask a question. What does that cause man, or it is, when I say man, it's true, because as I said, the ideas are very pertinent for man. I mean, what does that cause man, or such an animal as the Nachash, as the snake, to be? I mean, could you tell me something about his personality, so to speak? He has a certain kind of a personality. What kind of a personality does this combination result in? Okay, what can we know about him? Well, what's the answer?
Well,
From the Yerushalmi, you know the answer, but you also know the answer from the Pasuk. It means to say that when the instinct is combined with raw intelligence or mechanical intelligence, so when it reaches a certain level above the animal level that we have today, what results is a desire. The instinct becomes rooted in a desire for conquest. A desire for conquest and a desire to have control everything. That too is an aspect of the personality which does not stem from the Tzelem Elokim, but stems simply from the combination of the instinctual and the intelligence. Plain intelligence, as we mean it. Okay. Yes. Where do you see that in the Pasuk? Excuse me? In the Pasuk, where... What does Pasuk say? Yeah, that's exactly. What did the Nachash say to Chava? It's an interesting thing. When you look at the Pesukim, and you see what the Nachash said to Chava, you see, there's something strange in this Pesukim. Why? Because it seems to be that the Nachash says one thing to Chava, and something else happens to her. It doesn't follow through. Exactly. Because the Nachash said to Chava when he enticed her, he said that you will be the Yisim Kelokin, Yodei Tov Hara. Rashi says, Borei Olamos, you'll be powerful, a powerful force, a creator, a controller. You'll be able to have mastery over the world, over worlds that you can create. You'll become a master. Mastery over your situation. Okay? So you see from the Pasuk, that's how he enticed her. But it's very interesting. What happened when she responded to the enticement? It didn't follow that way. It says, V'teiro isho ki tova itz l'macho v'chisavo l'inayim v'nechmo itz l'haskil v'tikach mipir v'tochal. Okay? V'tipakach na'ine shneyam v'ed kerim. It doesn't say that they had this feeling, this v'yisam kelokim. That didn't happen. It seems, on the contrary, it seems tova, it's lamachol savo hilei nayim. It was something which was very desirous, very enjoyable on an instinctual plane, a type of almost like the expression is almost like a libidinous kind of expression. Okay, so this is what happened to her. It's an interesting thing. Okay, but let's forget about what happened to her for a moment. But what do you see from the Nachash? You see that a creature who has the combination of instinct and intelligence has a self-awareness, but more than a self-awareness, it's not just an awareness of the self, but it is a desire to place the self in a certain kind of a position. Okay? In a position of absolute control. That's what that's really what this combination of those two features result in. So human self-awareness, according to Yehadas, is not really, has nothing to do with the Tzelem Elokim. I mean, this is an important yesod, really. Because there are many people that try to take human self-awareness and place it in the area of the religious sphere. You see? According to Yehadas, at least according to the religion of Yehadas, that is not the case. According to the religion of Yehadas, on the contrary, the self-awareness is something which stems purely from the instinctual. What proof, what other proof do you have for such an idea? What other proof do you have for such an idea? Okay. Proof is very simple. Vanochi off of Efer. Okay. What did Avraham Avinu say? I'm dust and ashes. How could he say he's dust and ashes when he's really the Tzelem Elokim? Tzelem Elokim can't be dust and ashes. What's the answer? The answer is, insofar as I partake of the self-awareness, insofar as I reflect upon myself, I'm really off of Eifer. Okay? In other words, the desire to know what one's station is stems from really the part of man which is off of Eifer. That's the instinctual. So the moment a person reflects about himself, he is ipso facto off of Eifer. Because self-reflection is from the instinctual. The instinctual is off of Eifer, is nothing. Okay. And let me put it this way. The instinctual part of man is not bad. You have to understand. The instinctual part of man is not something that is bad. It is only bad if it's not understood and it's for what it really is. It's proper perspective. You gain many things through the instincts. Sight and knowledge is gained through the eyes, through the senses. I mean, these are important things. The knowledge of oneself, existence is important. But insofar as an individual wishes to place himself in a certain slot and what he is in terms of his own self-importance, that is something which is generated totally by the part of man which is instinctual, and not by the part of man which is the divine element. And that's why that reflection on the desire for a person to reflect upon himself in a way in which he has a self-importance stems from the instinctual part of man. The intellectual part of man would say he's off a vapor. Okay? That he simply, there's no room in the divine element for any kind of self-importance, or is there a need for self-importance? That's something which I emphasized many times before. That it's not that the person who is in line with his divine element is a person who is undergoing what we would call social humility. It's not a humility. It's simply he has no need for that kind of he's very happy in the state of recognition of what he really is. And he's not seeking importance by recognition from others. Yes? The snake would not have any, would not, it would seem to me, I mean, certain things we could know. I mean, certain things we can know, even though the snake doesn't exist anymore, but certain things we can know for the simple reason that we know qualitatively what certain entities are. In other words, guilt comes from the area of the conscience. Okay, the snake didn't have that, so obviously he wouldn't feel guilty. Okay, yes? For a very simple, why the Nachash, Rabosa, you guys should be able to answer this question. All right? The question is, why did the Nachash himself eat the apple? No. Because... No, because the answer is, I mentioned this many times, why do Chazal say, what was that apple? Nobody says an apple, by the way, it's a mistake. Okay, it was a grape, it was a grain, it was... Because it was a pomegranate, it was an esrog. I mean, all these different interpretations as to what it was. What are the Chazal trying to tell us? It was nothing. There's nothing special about it, basically. That's what they're saying. It wasn't the particular fruit of the tree that had magical powers. That's a primitive way of thinking. That's not Yehudas. We don't think that way. What it means, it was something, anything, whatever it was. Obviously, it looked nice. It had a nice appearance. But what made the fruit what it was the prohibition, the injunction of God. It wasn't the substance. It wasn't the substance. The Nachash never received any injunction. You know, it's not a... he's very smart, I told you. We can go into a lot of speculation on the personality of the Nachash. But somebody mentioned something very good, and I think it's true. I think that you don't have to have that much speculation, because there are people that actually are that way, unfortunately. I mean, unfortunately, there are wicked individuals in the world. Yeah, this is a study of good, but it's a study of evil as well. Because you can't know one without the other. And we do recognize Rishayim. And in my opinion, the personality of the pure Russia is the person, the one who is purely evil is the same personality as the Nachash. Okay? Yeah. So now you can take your speculation to an area where you actually can do investigation. I don't know how many people today, I mean, I read all these things about the Nazis and Hitler, Yimach Shemal, and all these different things, but so far it appears the world is not ready to really sit down and analyze the mind of an evil individual. A lot of things written about it, but it shouldn't happen again, and this... But so far, we do not have any scientific approach to what exactly that type of mind, like a mind of a Hitler, what exactly is it? How would you define it? Quantify it scientifically? No one has been able to do it so far, and it doesn't seem to me that people are even interested in doing it. Some are, they feel they know what evil is, and we just keep away from it, and that's enough. But Yehudas doesn't maintain that way. Yehudas maintains everything's a study. Everything has to be analyzed. You have to understand evil. But the Nachash was a study in evil, basically, and it does exist today. It does exist today. It is available today, unfortunately, for study, but as I said, I don't see anybody really taking up that that kind of a program. Okay. Let me answer the question we just raised before. Okay. In other words, the Nachash has a self-awareness on an instinctual plane, not a self-awareness on in an existential sense. I mean, okay? Alright? In terms of existence. Alright? It doesn't have an awareness in an existential sense. I don't mean the existentialist. Okay?
Would you be saying, in other words,
the word existential. Man cannot have the proper notion of God. The notion of God, which is proper to man, of course, which is a limited concept.
The very notion itself
presupposes the Tzelem Elokim. That's what Ibn Ezra says, that the word out of Shem Elokim never appears by the Nachash. Only appears by man. Okay? Now I want to get to the Pasuk Yudalad. At Pasuk Yudalad, you have an interesting thing. There it says, "Vayomar Hashem Elokim al Nachash ki yasisa zos or atam mikol abhem mikol chayes asara gochon choselech vofer tochal kol yimei chayecha." So that's one pasuk. Let's just take these two points. So what was the punishment for the Nachash? And we'll just take these two points. We'll stop here. Okay. One punishment was al gochon choselech vofer tochal kol yimei chayecha. In other words, the snake will henceforth move, perambulate on its body without legs. Okay, it doesn't have any legs anymore, and it will eat dust, consume dust all the days of its life. That's one. And the second thing is the eva oshis bein cho vein oisho vein zaracho vein zara. This is a strange pasuk too, but it says, and I will create a hatred. I will implant a hatred between you, meaning the snake, and between the woman. I mean, what about the man? Okay, between the woman, and between your seed and between her seed. And then it says that he will attack you in the head, and you will attack him in the heel. Okay. All right. So let me just say this. What I'm going to do is like this. I'm going to treat the first thing and the second thing is two elements. Okay. In other words, al gachon choselech vafatochal is one, and the second one, veiva oshis, the hatred between the woman and the snake, and between the woman's offspring, meaning all of mankind, and the snake as a second element. Okay. All right. And I want to go along with the way we're interpreting Plame Shot in the Pasuk. All right. Let's take the second one first. Second one is the hatred between the snake and between man. Okay. Now, here, you know that it is true, and this is not being metaphorical or symbolic, but the fact is that the serpent is, without a doubt, the symbol of evil. I mean, this is true if you just study the histories of various cultures, Egyptian and all the primitive cultures. Snake always appears as a symbolically as evil, and also as a something. It relates to man in an ambivalent way. I mean, somehow man is attracted, but he rejects it as well. Okay. Now, what is the meaning of this pasuk? That the hatred is implanted between man and between the snake. Okay. Well, what's the purpose of it? First of all, what kind of a punishment is that to the snake? I mean, the snake's not going to be around, obviously. He's not going to... Does he really care? I mean, is this something that the snake really cares, that the man hates him and tries to kick him in the head and he attacks him in the heel? I mean, what does this mean? What import does it have? Okay? Yeah. I think, again, we have to go with the same approach that we're operating with now, and that is, let's go back to the situation in Gan Eden. In Gan Eden, apparently, when God completed the creation, so it was really from a logical standpoint, there was an animal that had higher intelligence, as we said before, and that really completed the picture. Man wasn't the only one with intelligence. There was an animal that had a higher intelligence, and that animal was a snake. But the difference between man and the snake was that man had a tzelem elokim, a divine element, and the snake just had intelligence and instinct. Okay. Now, what was the problem? The problem was, apparently, that the existence of such a creature in the scene in Gan Eden resulted in a situation where the two would meet. The snake would meet with man, in this case the woman. All right? And what it means is actually, if you remember, the pasuk says that Vayitzar Hashem Elokim min Adam kol chayas asor v'eskel ofesh man v'yovi elavim l'eretz ma'ikru lo. Okay, v'ikru anam shemos l'chol abhem l'ofesh ma'im l'chol chayas asorah. Okay, so you see that man, the Torah says, was engaged in contemplation and understanding the various animals, understanding their nature, understanding how they're differentiated from him. Apparently what the Torah is saying is that the existence of the Nachash was not something that was good for man. Because when man contemplated the Nachash, interacted with the Nachash, and he saw a being that has intelligence, high intelligence, and has an instinctual nature, this was something which affected him. In this case, it was the Isha, okay, her. But it affected her. And the idea of such a creature, and the way such a creature exists, and satisfies its instincts, was something which for man did not work out very well. It was not good. Okay? It drew man into fantasy and illusion about such a type of existence, since part of his nature partook of the same thing that animal had in his nature. Okay? So therefore, it was necessary to remove this animal from the existence of the sphere of the animal kingdom. He had to be removed. Okay, that's basically what the story is telling us. So therefore, now we understand what it means. Al gechon chaselech v'ofer tocha kol yemechayecha. Really, on one plane, we'll get that, it has another meaning too, but upon a plain, simple understanding is that the snake became something which is despised by man, because he crawls on the ground and dust is constantly in his face. It's something which a person, it became a metaphor for something which is of a lowly state, something low. At the same time, it also is a metaphor for something which is evil. Because, I'm not going to go into the psychological reasons for this, has psychological roots. But basically, what the story is telling, what the Torah is telling us is, that God took this creature, which for man was a danger originally, and caused man to reflect on a type of life which would be extremely harmful for him, and God took that animal and, on the contrary, he converted it into a creature which is symbolic of the strife that goes on within his own psyche. Okay? And it creates a certain awareness in man. So that when man studies the animal kingdom, there's a double benefit. One benefit is insofar as knowledge is concerned, okay? But also it means man encounters various creatures. And you see, man is affected in a certain way by various creatures. Even the Torah recognizes. Guraria, Yehuda, I mean, certain animals reflect to man certain characteristics. So the snake was used as something which will create a certain awareness in man of his own conflicts, his own ambivalence, his attraction to evil, and at the same time his repulsion from evil, okay? So this creature, which originally was a danger for man, was converted into something which is an element in evoking, if it's followed properly, in evoking a certain type of knowledge. See, the reason why I think that it's bein ha'isha, ve'eva osh is bein ha ve'en ha'isha, is because I explained once before that the Torah says that man and woman are really one entity. Vayikra Shimom Adam B'yom Yiborom. Okay? It means to say that there's a combination. But I mentioned that a woman excels in a certain type of area of knowledge, and a man excels in a different kind of area of knowledge. But I believe I mentioned in that shiur that the area of knowledge of psychology is really a feminine kind of knowledge. And I would say psychology is a feminine kind of knowledge and philosophy is a masculine kind of knowledge. Now again, I'm making it clear that in every person there exists both elements, both the masculine and the feminine, whether the person is a male or a female. But there still is a prototype. And I believe what the Torah is saying is as follows, that the knowledge insofar as the self is concerned, the knowledge of the self, is really something which a woman is more, it requires a certain feminine kind of personality in order to be able to reflect on the inner world, a certain sensitivity. That's what Sara had, Shema Bekola. It's a certain type of chachma, a certain type of knowledge. The Torah reflects this many times, that a woman is much better at perceiving the inner world. So that's why the pasuk says, Ve'eva oshis beincho veincho isha. Because isha in this case means an individual who has knowledge of the inner world, and an individual who has knowledge of the inner world will have a certain kind of a hatred for evil when they encounter it and when they understand it. So I think the pasuk is on, again, it's on two levels, but it's not a denial of the actual and the physical, which is true also, there is an eva, there is a psychological eva, that's on the surface, okay? But there is a deeper eva, which stems from knowledge. That's the kind of knowledge that an isha really represents. Sara Shema Bekola, a knowledge of the inner world. So there is a knowledge on two planes. One is just on the surface plane, which is true, but then there's a deeper level where the understanding is used to actually to encounter the evil. Okay? And it's interesting. In both cases they're parallel. Why? Because insofar as the actual is concerned, that's true. But the actual encounter between man and snake in a physical sense is really a simile for the case of the on the intellectual plane, the psychological plane, the intellectual plane, which means that man is very good at attacking his instincts that are on the surface, but the instincts beneath the surface are much more difficult. Who you ata teshuvenu rosh? Who you shuvcha rosh? Meaning man. Who you shuvcha rosh? Va'ata teshuvenu. Okay. What does the navi say? The navi says akov halev mikol v'onashu. Okay. The heart of man is deceitful and crooked and twisted, which means in order to understand evil, you have to go down beneath the surface with knowledge and really see what it is. So therefore, hu yishuv charosh means with all the intelligence and with all the knowledge that man has, which is exemplified by the knowledge of the isha, the knowledge of the internal world, in spite of all that knowledge, it's only hu yishuv charosh, which means that the evil inclination lies deep, very deep. And that's why Chazal say it's called tzafuni, something which is hidden in the inner recesses of the human psyche. So therefore, with all the psychology, it's still only rosh. It's still only insofar as that part which is visible, the head. But va'ata teshufenu akev means, that's akov alev mikol v'onashu, because man is really distorted, the evil inclination is distorted. That's where he gets man. That's how he attacks man. In ways that man doesn't know, hidden, a sudden attack at the heel, so to speak, where a person can't see. So really, both aspects are true. Both aspects are true. The mashal is true, and the fact is true. The fact in the Bria is something which God took something in the Bria which was harmful, and he converted it to something which can cause man to reflect. Man can use to reflect on a deeper plane. Now, just let me explain the last part, which I'll explain to the best of my ability, and that is the idea, the curse of the snake. Oror ato mikol abehemo mikol chayas asada al gechon choselech vofer tochol kol yimei chayecha. I think what the Torah is saying here is as follows. The Torah is saying an interesting thing. That is that the way a being is structured physically has a lot to do with the way the being functions psychologically. In other words, that man is a biped, he walks on 2 feet. It's not just coincidental. But man is a biped, he couldn't function the way he does if he walked on all fours. Okay? For many reasons. One of the reasons is because a person requires a certain dignity, a kavod adam. And he would not be able to have those type of concepts if he walked on all four. But what the pasuk is saying is that the nachash, who was basically reflects in human terms, megalomania, because that's basically what the nachash was. The nachash was basically a megalomaniac. That's a combination of the instinctual and intelligence. The moment he was consigned to the ground, and he didn't have any legs anymore, and he always the dust was always thrown in his face, he couldn't function anymore in his original manner, with his haughtiness and with his egoistic inner world. Okay, the Torah is teaching you that the way a person or an animal is structured physically plays a role in the way they function internally and psychologically. And what the Torah is saying is that the moment he was physically, he lost his legs, and he was caused to crawl on the ground and to eat dust, the moment that happened to him, he couldn't function anymore egoistically. And that's when the Nachash basically ceased to exist. Okay.
Done.
Okay. The question was why it says that Hashem came on Nachash. The reason is because it's a different kind of a communication. It wasn't a communication to the Nachash per se. Okay. It was a change in the order of creation in order that man should be able to survive. It's a different kind of a statement. Okay. Let's look with a few things that were left over about the Nachash. Okay. And a few isolated points, but I think that they're important, and they simply follow from the premises of the way we explain the Torah insofar as the Nachash is concerned, what exactly the Nachash meant. And most of the Mefarshim really interpret the Nachash literally. I mean, Rav Sadia Goyin, the Ibn Ezra, I mean, Rashi, the Ramban doesn't say it's allegorical. I mean, most of the Rishonim all interpret it literally. The ones that have problems with it was more the Achron. I mean, the Sforno, he's the main one. I mean, and then you have the Radak sort of hedges. I mean, he says he has problems with the Ibn Ezra. Those problems which we answered, basically. Okay, because one of his questions is, so why doesn't it say by the curse of Nachash that God took away his das? Okay, so we explain that. We explain the answer to the question, and that is that the way a person is structured physically, according to the Torah, has a lot to do with the way he functions mentally as well. So it means to say that originally the Nachash really walked on, had feet, had legs. And once he lost his legs, which means that he had to crawl on the ground. I mean, perambulate on the earth with a certain type of motion. Yes, so rhythmic motion. So then he could not be the same creature of arrogance that he was in his previous existence. It would be impossible. The Torah doesn't really tell us how the das was removed. It simply tells us that this was done to him, and ipso facto, his das was removed. That's how God did it. I mean, it's a separate thing. Okay, but the Torah is teaching an idea here, namely that the way a person or an animal is structured has to do with the inner life as well. Man walks upright, And he can, he, if men walked on all fours, he would not be able to function as a man. Okay. The it's an interesting thing. Now, I'd like to just mention now what the something I'm going to show as a matter of curiosity, and that is, how can we know? Can we know how the Nachash actually looked before? What he looked like before? Okay. So most people imagine a long snake with legs. Okay. I don't think that that's correct. I think that that he was shaped completely differently. As a matter of fact, if you look in the Ibn Ezra, interesting. The Ibn Ezra says, with regard to what I just mentioned, how he walked before, the Ibn Ezra says that he walked b'koma zekufa. You see? So he says, Ibn Ezra says, Ibn Ezra does not accept the idea that it's not literal. But in the end, he says, "Vayosha be'enai shehem advarim kimashmoam va'nachosh v'yemedaber v'yaholech b'koma zekufa." This is exactly what we said. In other words, he walked upright. He was a biped. The Nachash was a biped as well, as man. Okay? Because in order for his internal life to operate, that is, to have the instinctual and the intelligence, that combination, he had to walk b'koma zekufa. So originally he wasn't shaped at all the way he was shaped later. The Torah used the term Nachash, the term Nachash, because that's the term we use for the Nachash we have today. But basically, the moment he ceased to be a biped, and he had to have a way of moving about. So then he was designed differently the way we see him today, because he simply had to be able to get around. Okay, but his present structure is no indication of his original structure. That's his present structure is there because of a functional matter. Since he lost his legs, so then he had to be structured the way he is in order to be able to move the way he does. But originally, the original Nachash was not structured like that at all. Okay? There's the Chazal seems to indicate that also. The Chazal says like a gummel. We said, the way we interpreted the curse, we said the curse is to be understood on two levels. The way Torah always has an inner pnim and an outer shell. I mean, that's the way Torah always works, the ideas of Torah. So both are true. So what we're saying is that that with regard to the hatred between the Nachash and between the Isha, that it's true physically. Okay, there's a klipa, there's an outer shell, but it also, we mentioned that there are ideas behind that as well. And the ideas behind it is that the Nachash originally was a dangerous animal for man. Because when man saw an animal that has intelligence and has instinct, so man was attracted to that kind of a behavior. And therefore, the existence of such an animal was actually presented a great danger to man. By the way, I mean, this is something which is based on very deep psychological principles. Namely, that in man, you find a strong identification in man between man and the animal kingdom. There is a very strong identification. That process is something which is in the human mind, and that's why you'll see, I mean, the whole idea of pets and the whole idea of all these types, especially in early youth. Children identify completely with animals. And that's really, according to the Ramban, that's the Yesod HaKabbonis. I mean, that's the Yesod HaKabbonis. That the Torah utilizes that identification between man and animal. And that's why when the man sees the animal slaughtered, he thinks to himself, is Damo Tachas Dami? And and et cetera, et cetera. So the so in man there's a great identification. This is a psychological principle. There's a very strong identification between man and the and animals, and especially in childhood. So therefore, the existence of the snake was a great danger for man because of that fact. It's interesting. Aristotle also made that observation. Aristotle says that most people choose to live their lives like animals, not like human beings. That they choose the life of the animal means their whole life is nothing more than creating a plan for instinctual gratification. I mean, basically, that's the person's that's the modern day American society's idea of the good life, is plain and simple. They never have any idea of study or learning or involving themselves in chachma. That's not part of a good life. Good life is simply instinctual. It means that they desire to live as animals. Now, that being the case, were there such an animal as a nachash who could live his life with the instinctual and with a certain kind of with a certain level of intelligence, okay? This would be something which would cause man to proceed even stronger in his course to live like an animal. The one thing that puts man in a situation where he frowns upon the life of the animal is the fact that the animal lacks intelligence. I mean, this is a very big thing, because it's a big put-down. Because even the most base man, the most base individual, always recognizes intelligence. Okay? So even Amalek recognizes intelligence. So the recognition of intelligence is the thing, the very thing that creates the breach between man and between animal, and that's why that intermediary kind of creature, the original nachash, had to be removed from the scheme of creation. Okay, but what God did was more than just simply remove it. He converted it into a different kind of an animal, an animal which would bring to mind for man, bring to man's mind the very struggle that he has, the internal struggle that he has, and the nachash is really such an animal, because the nachash has deep roots psychologically. You only have to study a little bit of the history of the primitive cultures, and you'll see what a role the nachash plays. I mean, that it's something which has an attraction there and to the instinctual. There's also a type of repulsion, revulsion about the nachash, because the nachash was converted into something which causes man, when he comes in contact with it, it creates associations in his mind and causes him, it causes a stirring in his existence concerning his inner life, which if he uses it properly, so then he can gain knowledge from it. If he doesn't use it properly, so of course then nothing becomes. Or on the contrary, it could be used for evil. I mean, you see, in the primitive societies, it really was used as a symbol of evil. So the nachash we mentioned was converted into something which can be used by man to remind him of his fate as a human being, as a human existence, or what his nature is. But okay, I mean, I think that the pshat fits in very nicely in a pasuk. But of course, it would be better if we have a raya for that. A raya would be very nice. And in fact, there is a raya. Where's the raya? Exactly. The Parshim Bamidbar. The Parshim Bamidbar is the raya. Because what does the Pasuk say? The Pasuk says that's in Bamidbar Chafalef, in Kikas. So the Pasuk says, Vayedaber ha'om, it's Chaf Aleph Dalet. Vayedaber ha'om be'lokim uv'moshe. Interesting. The nation spoke against God and they spoke against Moshe Rabbeinu. And Lama Lusan Mitzrayim, okay, etc., etc. Yeah. Vayeshalach ha'roshem ba'om eis ha'nechoshim ha'srafim. Vayenashchu es ha'om. Vayomos ha'amrov mi'Yisrael. Okay. So God sent the Nechoshim Asrafim. Why Nechoshim Asrafim? So Rashi says, Rashi quotes Chazal, of course. That what? He says, Yavo Nechosh Shelokah Lotzoas Diba the Yifra Mimotzie Diba. Okay? Because basically, it was a reminder. It was used as an instrument to remind the people of what? Of the Nechosh HaKadmoni, the original Nechosh. Now, what did the original Nechosh do? The original Nechosh also spoke against God. Of course, the Nechosh said, the first thing Nechosh said, Kedei Elokim, ki v'yom achochem mimenu v'nifkechu einechem, v'yisem kelokim yodei tovara. Borei Olamos, Chazal say. So, you see, the original Nechosh is the creature in which there is the combination of intelligence and instinct. And the combination of intelligence and instinct results necessarily in one thing, a distortion of the idea of the Creator. A distortion of the idea of the Creator. Vayedaber Om Belokim of Moshe was a distortion. So therefore, Yavo Nochash, the Nochash, who distorts the idea of God because of his instinctual component and the fact that his intelligence is tied only to the instinctual, it necessarily results in that kind of arrogance and egocentricity, which has to deny HaKadosh Baruch Hu, can't tolerate the old Malchus Shemayim, and therefore has to distort the idea of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that's why the Nechoshim were sent. But interestingly enough, what was the refuah? What was the refuah? The refuah was to take the Nechosh v'sim also al neis. Voy or kol ha-noshech v'ros ha-vachoy. So what does the Mishnah say? V'chi Nechosh meimis ha-noshech machaya. Ela v'shoa she-Yisrael she-Yisrael mestakon klapei malo. If it goes in the tshuva, so then the onus is removed. Of course, there are many ideas in the Nechosh, like the Rishonim say, Ramban says, that the fact that the Nechosh, the Torah always does that, it uses the same instrument, and Ibn Ezra says that some people want to say that this Nechosh was makabel certain powers. He says, Chalila v'chalila, to say such an idea. He says that that's basically Avodah Zarah. But on the contrary, the reason why the Nechosh was used was to show that it's not the Nechosh that's the Mamis, it's the person, how he looks at the Nechosh. Which Nechosh, really? What does he mean? Is it Mistakon Klapei Malah? So you can put a lot of things to Mistakon Klapei Malah. Just to look up. I mean, look up, you don't have to have a Nechosh, but anything, just put the stick up. But the answer is the looking up, and Chozer B'tshuva was in the very same chait of the Nechosh. The very same chait of the Nechosh, which they were involved in, and which the Nechoshim Asrafim that were sent among the nation were sent there as a signal to remind them of the Nechosh HaKadmoni, that same chait, if they're mistakel klapei mala, and they understand what the Nechosh is in their own life, in themselves, they recognize the Nechosh, and they understand what it is, then that's Chos B'tshuva. And Chos B'tshuva, so then, miyad nirpim. Then they receive the refuah. So the Nechosh. So I mean, both are true. Both are true. Ramban says because it's kenegative. And actually, if you study sympathetic magic, you'll find that in sympathetic magic they always have to have an antidote. But the same thing itself, you try to avoid. Okay, if it's an evil thing, or else they'll take that thing and they'll destroy it. Okay, but over here it's exactly the opposite. You're taking it and you're looking at it. That would be the opposite of what the Ovdei Avodah Zarah, the primitive cultures do, and that's to show, to demonstrate that it's not the Nechosh, but it's the individual who's Chozer B'tshuva. That's the same, really. That's what Chazal said. The same mushel with the May Meriva that we're discussing. The Medrash says that the Tzagnini Paro said that we'll throw the babies into the Yor, because Moshian Shel Yisrael, we see that Moshian Shel Yisrael is going to suffer through water. And Chazal said, and they didn't know that it was really the May Meriva. It was really the name Meribah. They thought it was the Yor, so they threw the babies in the Yor. So they thought they're going to destroy the individual who will be involved in saving Klal Yisrael, Moshe Rabbeinu. But they didn't understand that it really is the memory. What did Chazal say? What do you mean they understand memory? How are they supposed to understand memory? What kind of an idea is this? What the Medrash is saying is that the primitive person thinks it's the substance.